Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, think, and recover. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician, scientist, and lifestyle medicine pioneer with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. In this episode, I'm excited to be joined by two leading experts in the area of talking about weight, diet, health, and exercise, and we're going to cut through the messy world of trends and hacks and distill science-based perspective. I'm excited to be joined by Yuna Jatta, who has degrees in cognitive neuroscience and music from Harvard University. She's a concert pianist and composer. Jatta created and co-hosts with Dr. Phillips the health podcast Food We Need to Talk, which has had over 2.4 million downloads. They're also both co-authors of the upcoming book, Food We Need to Talk, the science-based, humor-laced last word on eating, diet, and making peace with your body, that will be released July 11th. Dr. Edward Phillips is an associate professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School and is founder and director of the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. He's integrating whole health lifestyle medicine training for students and trainees across the VA as National Whole Health Education Champion for Health Professions Trainees. He co-hosted the NPR Daily Exercise Podcast, WBUR's Magic Pill, which was awarded an Edward R. Murrow Award for Excellence in Innovation. And he has a long list of other accomplishments, because I've had the personal pleasure of getting to know Eddie over the years. So welcome both of you to the podcast. Let me start by giving each of you a chance to kind of say more about kind of the work you've done and how the work you've done in the past has led to the podcast and to the book. So, you know, let me start with you, and then I'm going to be really interested in how you guys met and how your worlds collided.
Wonderful. So first of all, generous of you to call me an expert. Thank you. That word has never been applied to me in my life. But anyways, I would say I came to health and fitness very much as like my personal interest. So I was never overweight growing up, but I always wanted to be skinnier, basically. And so I was kind of just, you know, casually like restricting food a little bit here and there in middle school and high school. But then when I got to college, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my time. Everybody else goes out and parties and whatever. And I was like, yes, I can do whatever I want. Like I can not eat and go to the gym as much as I want. And nobody's here to watch over me, basically. So I started really restrictively dieting and working out a lot in college and pretty quickly experienced weight gain, basically from the binge eating I developed through like under eating a lot. And then I would get so hungry and I would start to binge eat. And so that started this big journey for me of figuring out like what exactly leads to weight loss and also navigating eating disorders, because they were two things that I was always struggling with, was like trying to lose weight, but then also navigating disordered eating and eating disorders. And so around senior year of college, I started to get really into lifting weights, which is something I had never really thought about before, because to me, it seemed like something that was for guys to do and it made you bigger because it made you muscular. And that introduction really led me to the more science-based fitness community, because if there is one thing that like nerdy guys who like lifting are into, like they like want to make lifting a science. And so I started reading all these papers about like metabolism and how weight loss actually works and how like building muscle works and how fat loss works. And I was like, wait a minute, like all of this stuff is pretty straightforward. It's not really this like magical black box of like, I don't understand why like this diet doesn't work and that one does and whatever. And so I came to WBUR with an idea to the health editor there, Carrie Goldberg. And I had like, you know, the podcast was one line on a paper of ideas I brought her. And I was like, oh, I think, you know, it'd be really cool to have a podcast. And she said, wow, like you seem so passionate about this. Do you have any audio experience? And I was like, no, but I can learn so fast, I promise. And she said, oh, do you want to write a blog? And I was like, no, because it's 2018. Let's do a podcast. And so that's kind of how the podcast began. And I will let Eddie take over the next part of the story, which is how we got introduced.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Yuna. And I'll say, I think a lot of people can relate to the experience you had. I know certainly in college and many years later, just in clinical practice, I've had a lot of patients and this, I think, is such a relevant perspective on weight and diet to talk about it through your experience with disordered eating. So thank you. Yeah, Eddie, so you, I'll let you give your own introduction, which I cannot do any justice to.
So I went through medical school, sort of mystified about when we were going to learn about health. And when we went to talk on exercise, it's like, you should an exercise to stay sane. So I did that. And nutrition, I could summarize the curriculum. It was what's for lunch, which not always helped me. And then stress, we had a stress course that was medical school, and not everyone passed that. And I was just sort of like mystified. We did learn that cigarettes were bad. And I spent the summer learning how to get people to quit smoking. And so went into the field of physical medicine and rehab because we're the exercise docs. We take care of your muscles. So that's kind of like the beginning of this. And then I got really intrigued with the question of, okay, exercise is really good for you. There's tens of thousands of articles. So why isn't everyone doing it? And, you know, so then that brought up questions of maybe there's some issues with motivation. How do you actually get the population moving? Because we know it's good, unequivocally good for so many different things. And I know on this show, you cover multiples of that topic. Once I started dealing with that, then I realized, there's more than just exercise. And the broader field is lifestyle medicine. I can talk to people about exercise, but if they're already exercising, that's not a hot topic for them. And if they're never going to exercise, then let's talk about something that's of interest to you. So that's lifestyle medicine. And you and I are pioneers in this field. It's only been around for maybe the last 15, 20 years would be generous to say it's been around that long. So that's sort of the intro. Now, how did the podcasting come about? I met Carrie Goldberg. She was the health and science editor at WBUR. She came to cover when we had the U.S. Surgeon General come to speak at our conference. So I met her, and it turns out we were college classmates and we were friends. And she would ask me periodically on a slow news day, Eddie, why should I exercise today? And that turned into sort of a blog on her part. And then the first podcast called The Magic Pill. So we did The Magic Pill. It's 21 days. And if you listen to it, maybe you're hate exercise a little bit less. We won this big award for it. And then the lights went out because we were done with that podcast. So then a couple of years later, Una makes her way into the scene. The full story is that she cold called Carrie Goldberg and then persisted until Carrie responded. And basically, that's where the match was made, where she said, Una, you've got the passion. Maybe let's marry this with a different perspective. So Una and I, as you look at us, have vastly different perspectives on the world from our ages to our genders to our sensibilities. But we both are passionate about what's it going to take for us and for the population to get healthier and happier while doing it.
Yeah, I basically call Eddie my American dad because Carrie introduced us and then we started chatting. It turns out he has three kids that are like all around my age. And so then like when we'd record together and stuff, he would always be driving me to and from the studio. So we'd spend a lot of time in the car together. And then I'd be like, oh, Eddie, I don't know what to do about this. I don't know what to do about that. And so he would give me advice. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this what it's like to have an American dad? Because, my parents are very Albanian. So they're very Eastern European. And so I was like, wow, now I get two dads. It was awesome.
Although, Eddie, I don't know how you feel about being a second dad.
it's joyful.
That's fantastic. Eddie, I want to go back to something you said, which to me really interesting in how exercise is kind of teed up and presented. Like you said, unquestionable, irrefutable data that it's good for you in so many ways, right? 40 different conditions. But I don't hear, whether it's to clinicians or to people in any article I read, about the physiology behind why exercise is good. Because to me, that's so fascinating. Right? It's so compelling of what it's doing at a physiologic level to really transform your body. I mean, how your genes are expressed, it's like a night and day transformation. I think people go at it thinking, I'm going to burn calories, not thinking, I'm going to change my genetic expression. So the physiology to me is fascinating. Do you feel that that part is communicated well? Do you feel like that would help people in terms of understanding exercise?
I'm a big fan, and if you listen to Food, We Need to Talk, we get deep into the weeds of physiology and metabolism with experts. But I think my basic answer is that probably more compelling to folks is to not focus, and this has actually been shown in some literature, not focus on the health benefits of exercise, but rather that it just makes you feel so good, that you're going to be in a better mood when you come back from a 10-minute walk. You are going to be digesting your food better, and you could get deep into what's going on and how your mitochondria are soaking up the glucose better, and your insulin resistance is going down just because you're out there walking. But I think, to me, the message is, if I feel better right away, if I'm happier, if I sleep better. We joke in our house, brought up my kids, that we had timeouts, you know, if the kids weren't behaving, but we also had adult timeouts. And when there was an argument of some sort, I would call a timeout, and the kids would look like, well, do I have to leave? Like, no, I'm going to get on the rowing machine for 10 minutes. And then we can continue this conversation. And I would come back like, what were we talking about? And why was I so angry? And I think my answer to you, Sharon, is, you know, yes, we can get into the physiology of it, but this one you could sort of sell on, it's good for you and you'll feel better right away.
Yeah, I think that's what sustains. To your point, I think the reward that may be down the road, you know, is a different mindset of doing something versus today I'm going to feel better if I do something. So yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you about both the podcast and the book. Your passion, like you said, comes from your experience. Can you talk more about kind of that whole process? You were mentioning that you, around your senior year, started to go to the gym. Can you speak more about how you got more and more and more involved and where that directed you?
So I just want to say, like, on this topic, I mean, these topics are related to me, the exercise topic and how I got more involved, because really what made the difference for me was the gym. Because prior to that, I think food to me was basically like, how can I hack this food I'm eating to eat as little as possible? Like, what can I do to eat as little as possible? And it was like, okay, like, I can get everything non-fat. I can eat as many vegetables as possible, just so they take up more space in my stomach. And that was kind of the tactic I took to food, with zero kind of look at like the micronutrients they offer. It was like, what will just keep me full, basically. And then my look at exercise was like, how can I burn the most calories? So I always say in the book, the first few years of college, I'd like go to the gym, get on the treadmill, and then count down 1,000 times, count down from 100, come down from 10, walk back, like whatever, do everything I could until I burned 400 calories on the treadmill, and then run off and be like, thank God. And that was basically my experience at the gym.
You're really enjoying it, weren't you?
yeah, seriously. It was just like, oh my, it was torture. It was like literally, and the way I thought of it was undoing the food I was eating. So I said, okay, if I let myself have a cookie today, then I have to run extra on the treadmill. It was very transactional. It was like exercise was my erase button for food, basically. And when I started lifting weights, it was just like such a 180 degree turn in terms of my mindset, because all of a sudden we were going from session to session. I was like, oh my God, like, I'm stronger this week than I was last week. And your progress is so concrete, and you see yourself getting better. And like, all of a sudden I could do things I couldn't do before. When I could do my first pull-up, I was like, oh my God, I can do pull-ups. Like, nobody can do pull-ups. This is so cool. How many push-ups can I do? How many more can I do? How much can I deadlift? It was so fun. And for the first time, I didn't want to take up less space in the world. It was like, this is the first time where it's like the way I looked wasn't my main priority for why I exercised. It was all the things I was doing. So that mindset shift also prompted all my shifts around food, I think, too, because it was like, now it's like, I have to eat enough to fuel my training. I have to give my body enough nutrients to actually make use of these things I'm making it do and make it stronger. And so that mindset shift for me was so important in terms of getting over the fasting, the under eating, all of that. Like, the gym was the reason I was able to not under eat anymore. And that's why I'm so passionate about women, especially not being afraid to go to the gym, because I think I was terrified of basically becoming muscular, especially from the culture I come from. It's just like seen as very unfeminine. There was a lot of reservations in the beginning. I mean, I remember like the first few months of me lifting weights, I lost weight and my parents are like, wow, you look so great. You've lost weight. And then like a week later, they were like, don't you think your shoulders are getting kind of big? Don't you think you're looking kind of manly? And I was like, you can't win. There's just no winning. It's like, you're too muscular. You're too fat. You're too this. It's like, whatever. So deciding that it's like, I'm not going to the gym for other people or to look a certain way for other people. I'm going because I love it so much. Since then, like, I lift 6 days a week, basically, since 2018. And I think I've taken 1 week off in that entire time. Like, I just, it's like my way of mentally resetting every day. It's my favorite thing to do. And even when I go on vacation, like when I've been to Hawaii 3 times in the past few years, like I've found a gym in Hawaii to lift at because it just adds so much to my life. Like, it makes my day so much better and it makes me so much happier. And my roommate can tell you when I'm in a bad mood, she's like, have you not gone to the gym today? And I'm like, no. So I just think like exercise was the thing that really changed my life. And I think that's why it's such a big thing that we come back to over and over again in the podcast. And it is kind of the foundation of like everything else. Like, if there's everything else in my life is going wrong, whether it's the way I'm eating or I'm very stressed out or I'm not taking care of my sleep, like exercise is something that I just never compromise on because it's been such a positive thing mentally, psychologically, and physically for me.
And both of you, you know, I think I'll say a lot of people listening have either been struggling with similar things you're struggling or you struggled with in terms of disordered eating. And certainly, I think a very large percentage of the population just struggles with weight in general, just a lot of diets, managing weight for personal reasons, for health reasons. And the two of you, from both of your perspectives, Eddie, you've really dedicated your entire career to fitness, understanding so much about exercise. And Una, you've come at this really from a very passionate personal perspective, and you've learned a lot. What would you start to share with people who are in really struggling with both or either? I mean, we can kind of look at these separately, but kind of the lessons you've learned along the way and things that you wish you knew that you would want people who are now where you were years back, where they could start and things that they can do and what you would want to share.
What a beautiful question. I'll start. And one of the things that I've come to understand as we talk to lots of experts and continue to just endlessly discuss this amongst ourselves and research it and write about it is that your body is doing the very best it can. Your body is not your enemy. It's just doing the best it can. And I think, you know, you gave me this phrase that we are adaptation machines. If you put us in a calorie-rich environment, also known as American society, we will gain weight. You don't have to leave the society, but it's really hard to lose weight in part because of the society we're in. If you're in an environment that calls upon you to be stronger because you're trying to, I don't know, your environment is walking, you know, a 7-day hike someplace, like your body will get stronger. If you're in if you're in a stressful environment, if your life is stressful, you can get a little bit stress hardy, but for a large part, stress is both can be external things hitting you, but also your own assessment. That's where things break down a little bit. So one, you know, quick thing in terms of, I remember going through medical school and thinking like, okay, like the body's magnificent. Everything it does is for its own, you know, for benefit. Like, not really. The thing I'm thinking of is that if you are under stress, and the stress is that you're trying to lose weight, there's this crazy perverse thing that happens that your cortisol levels go up and that causes you to store more fat. And then, you know, it's like one of nature's jokes that it stores the fat around your middle and you're just sort of like, you're sort of hamstrung by stressing out about losing weight and it sort of backfires. So it's just, I think it's more of a perspective that we're not perfect, and coming to some peace with that actually can make you happier. And I don't know, maybe you'll lose weight that way or you might not even care to once you understand what's going on.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Eddie, because so often I think we look at the weight piece as calories in, calories out. And for a lot of people, that equation doesn't work. And there are these variables like stress and sleep that aren't in the diet equation, if you will. So mentioning the importance of that is really, I think, another piece of the puzzle that deserves just as much attention, I think, as the diet and exercise that is harped on. In terms of, you know, like you mentioned, the cortisol and the impact it has in terms of the hormonal changes, Is there something that people can do and obviously manage stress? Do you have any advice on people who are stressed either over dieting or just stressed about infinite things that we can stress about? Like things that they can do so that they can make the changes in their life that are positively adaptive instead of negatively adaptive?
So we have a whole section on this in our book. The whole takeaways chapter of our stress chapter is about this basically. But there's a lot of things with stress, especially when it comes to breath work and mindfulness practices that I think we all hear about but don't really do. And I mean, I've been guilty of this for so long. Like, guys, meditation to me is like the worst thing on the planet. Like, truly. Like, I can't. It's too much. Like, sitting doing nothing is like the worst thing I could possibly be asked to do. But it is so important because we have so much stimulation all day long. And we're going from this to that to that to that with notifications from social media to our emails, to our work, to our personal lives, that it's like giving yourself the space to focus on just your thoughts and yourself and your body in the present moment is so important. And then manipulating your breath, like your breath is your most direct lever into your stress response, because your diaphragm breathing deeply is going to trigger your vagus nerves. And that is what triggers your parasympathetic rest and digest nervous system. And so the fact that we have this very concrete lever into controlling that, and yet so many of us don't ever think about it. And also you'll notice when you're very stressed, like your breathing is so shallow. Like I'll notice I'm working at my computer and I've forgotten to breathe for like a minute just because I'm so focused on doing something. So it's like, I think taking advantage of those things is so important. Getting out in nature is so important, which is something that a lot of us also ignore all the time. Getting sunlight has also been shown to reduce stress. And then focusing on our relationships, something else that's not talked about with health at all. And is ridiculous because when we look at the people that live the longest, they smoke sometimes, they drink sometimes, like it's crazy, but they have strong relationships and a strong community. And for some reason, that is totally neglected when we talk about our health and our stress levels. So I think those are some of the things that like are never talked about, but are so, so, so important. And I am guilty myself of not focusing on those things because I think they're less tangible and they're also less convenient for us to focus on, you know, because it's so much easier to say, only eat this and go to the gym. And these things take a lot more work. But I think they're things that everybody can do more to improve on.
I agree. Eddie, do you want to add to that?
I'll give it like a very different answer, which is that I think sometimes if the goal is just looking at a number on the scale, then you miss the point of the exercise. So what we get at, and this comes from, it's called Whole Health, and we do it across the Veterans Health Administration, where I work, is the first question to someone is, what do you want your health for? What really matters to you? And then my favorite question, because I deal with musculoskeletal issues, is, you know, what activity are you going to be able to do when you're feeling a little better? I know your knee is arthritic, and that's why you're here, and I can do X, Y, and Z. I can inject it and put creams on it and give you pills and send you to PT. None of that is new. What's new is asking the individual in front of me, okay, what's this getting in the way of? And then you hear the most wistful, beautiful stories. Like one that I love telling is a guy with a big belly carrying extra weight, which puts a stress at your knee. We could talk about the physics of that there. And his legs are weak. I know how to measure that. And he has trouble getting out of a chair unless he uses ours. So you're stressing out your knees, but what's this getting in the way of? And he goes, it's my grandson. I go, is he okay? He goes, oh, he's great. He's learning how to play baseball. He's 10 years old. I'll go like, that's lovely. What does that have to do with your knees? He goes, I need to teach him how to throw the ball. Okay. I'm still missing something here. I asked about the kid's father and he goes, oh, my son-in-law is lovely. He just doesn't know how to teach him right. So I have to do this. Like, this is my mission. This is the activity I need to do. When he throws the ball to me, I can't bend down and pick it up. Okay. That's really important to you. Yeah. It means everything to me. And then I try to do a therapeutic pause, which is hard for me, but let's try. What would you like to do? The patient looks at me and says, I was thinking that if I were to like lose a little weight and get my legs stronger, like the last 14 doctors and therapists told me, I'd be able to bend down, pick up the ball and throw it to my grandson. You just wrote yourself a lifestyle medicine prescription. What help do you need? You want to see a dietitian. I think I'm okay. I'm just going to try stop not eating crap. Can I say that? Sorry. You know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to, I know what not to eat. Great. What about the exercises? 12 people have shown me how to do them. I'm, you know, give me a month here. So, you know, it's back to what's the object of the exercise? Because if he never loses a pound and he's able to throw a ball with his grandson, he's happy and, you know, we've mission's accomplished.
Eddie and Yuna, it's also making me wonder, a lot of people don't know where to begin. I mean, exercise, I mean, everyone says exercise, right? And then there's the, well, what does that mean, right? Like, we never tell a patient, go get chemotherapy, you know? And I mean, it's, you know, we generally get much more granular because it's not one thing, right? It's so broad. It's so many. So I'll start with asking you, you know, when you first went to the gym, certainly you're looking at all these pieces of equipment and wondering, what the heck do I do, right? Where do I begin? How did you learn to come up with a routine at the gym? And then I'm going to ask you, Eddie, like, what does an exercise prescription look like for different goals that people have?
So that's such a good question. It definitely is one of the most common questions we get. And I think especially like women feel intimidated by the gym and the weight room because it's usually male dominated and you don't know how to do things. And truly and honestly, guys, I can guarantee you whatever things you're afraid to at the gym, I am legally blind. And if I figured out how to do it without being able to see the little signs and with tripping on everything in sight 5,000 times, I guarantee you, you'll be able to do it. I basically did it through YouTube videos. So I watched, I think I've had like a week where I first saw this girl lifting weights on YouTube. And I was like, oh, she looks like a Barbie. She looks so good. I was like, I'd never seen someone that looked like a real life Barbie doll. And I was like, what is she doing? And so I started just copying. She would post like, this is what my leg day looks like. This is what my arm day looks like. This is what my shoulder day looks like, blah, blah, blah. And so I literally just copied her routine. And so the first 2 or 3 months, I was like, I'm just going to do exactly what this girl does. And the more you do that, the more you start to realize, actually, this guy says full body training is probably better for lifting than this type of training. So you try that. And so I would watch them on YouTube, write them down on my phone, go to the gym, and then I would basically set up a corner with mats and I would try to pick only dumbbell exercises so I wouldn't have to be out in the machines too much. And I would do all my dumbbell stuff and then I would leave because I was basically hiding at the gym. I didn't want anybody to see me. And then like, okay, like today I'm going to like actually go and try the leg extension machine because I know where it is and like I'm pretty sure I know how to use that one. And so like, okay, then I conquered that. Okay. The next day, okay, maybe I'll try the lat pull down today. And so it was like, you know, adding machines one by one and then like super comfortable. Then it was like conquering the squat rack. Now I only use the squat rack, but I was terrified because I was like, what if I hurt myself? What if I do this wrong? Da, 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 whatever. And so, you know, I think the internet has literally unlimited resources using machines and dumbbells and barbells and how not to hurt yourself. And there's free programs online and there's also paid programs. And then if you have the funds, hiring a personal trainer, even for like 2 or 3 sessions, just to look at a few exercises will already make you feel so much more confident. And then I think in general, you just have to accept that like, you're not going to know what you're doing in the beginning because nobody does. And that's just how it is when you're starting something new. So every single person that's at the gym has been there before not knowing what to do. And the only reason they look like they know what they're doing is because they've gone. So all you have to do is go enough times that you also feel that way. And so I think as long as you are patient with yourself and forgive yourself, I guarantee you more embarrassing things have happened to me at the gym than will happen to you just because I have tripped on so many things. And so that should be encouraging to everyone that like nobody there really cares what you're doing. Nobody's going to remember you and you're going for yourself. And so it doesn't really matter.
Eddie, I'm sure you have a lot to say about that too.
So quickly, if you're asking about sort of an exercise prescription, it's actually, and folks can do this at home. We talk about FIT, F-I-T-T. What's the frequency of your exercise, the intensity, the time, and the type? So the first part's a pretty simple. Frequency, we'd advocate for every day, but 5 days a week is, or even if you're exercising twice a week, something, you know, that works for you. The intensity, if you're sitting around and we get you to go up and walk, that's already better. That's a low intensity. When you get up to the point where you can't sing, but you can talk, you're working moderately. And then if you're out of breath, you're working vigorously and you never have to go to vigorous. So you want to get to moderate intensity, you know, if that works for you. So frequency, intensity, the time, you're looking for a total of 150 minutes accumulated in the week. commonly 30 minutes, 5 days a week. I'm sure you've talked with folks about this on the podcast. My favorite last question, which is where you started, Sharon, is like, and what's the best type of exercise? So when I do big Zoom calls with hundreds of people that are learning about this, I ask them, okay, all at once, type in to the chat your favorite exercise. There'll be hundreds of different types of exercise. Whatever it is you want to do is the best exercise for you. And one of my favorite things is asking patients, because unless you ask, you will never, ever hear what they're doing. If you met my 92-year-old mom, you would not know that she swims. Maybe you'd smell her hair, or she didn't get the chlorine out. I had a patient the other day, I've never heard, tell me if you've heard this one before. They use a weighted hula hoop. Hello?
Oh my God. Hilarious.
Weighted hula hoop. And they said, should I continue? I go, yeah. Your core is really strong.
I really want to get one now. I love hula hooping. Right,
so so Yuna and I have just developed a challenge for ourselves on one of the podcasts. So the point is just whatever you want, if you want to garden, if you want to dance, if you want to hike, if you want to play pickleball, haven't picked that one up yet, that it all works.
Yeah, that's great.
Weighted hula hoop. Here we come, Yuna.
and there's a lot of questions that people have around exercise and metabolism, right? Everyone wants to boost their metabolism. I'm sure you both have a lot to say about that. So tell me about metabolism.
One of the really interesting things about exercise and metabolism is that exercise is the smallest contributor to your metabolic rate, right? For someone who does exercise, it's up to 5% of your metabolic rate for the week. And for someone who doesn't, it's zero, right? Basically, the long story short is like so much of your metabolism is taken up by other things like your basal metabolic rate, which is just the calories your body burns to stay alive. That is the vast majority of the calories that you are burning in a day. And even if you're exercising all the time, if you average it out over the week, like imagine all the time you spend at the gym, like not actually exercising, right? You're resting between sets, you're fixing your hair, you're going to the locker room, you're driving to the gym, you're coming back. So how many minutes are you actually spent exercising? And then average that out over the week, it's really not that many calories. So the reason to be exercising is not the calories that you are burning during the exercise session. And when we look at studies of weight loss and we look at diet versus diet and exercise, the difference between the diet and exercise and diet groups is not that big. And it's certainly not what you would expect from the extra calories they're burning from exercise. So it seems like whatever extra calories you're burning, it's not that many. And all those calories do not translate into that much extra weight loss. So people are like, okay, great. So I'm not going to exercise then because it doesn't contribute to my weight loss. But what you should exercise is that it makes a massive difference in terms of weight loss maintenance. So in the exact same studies, when they look at people who exercise versus people who don't and continue the diet, those who don't exercise gain back the weight after their diet and those who keep exercising do not. And we probably think it has to do with the fact that people who exercise maintain their muscle mass a lot better. And muscle mass is the biggest contributor to your basal metabolic rate because muscle is a very metabolically active tissue. So when you're exercising, not only are you growing bigger muscles, but you are tearing down muscles as you exercise that get repaired afterwards. And that costs a lot of energy for your body. And so although you're not burning many calories in your workout session, you are burning a lot more calories outside your workout session as your body repairs those muscle tissues. And so especially as you're aging, like going through 30s, 40s, and 50s, and muscle loss becomes a real problem, that is the biggest reason why people's metabolic rate slows down as they age. If you look at just your basal metabolic rate, it does not change from 20 to 60. But the reason people feel like their metabolism is getting slower is because they're losing muscle mass and they become less physically active. So I think the biggest reason to exercise in terms of your metabolism is to maintain your muscle mass and keep that metabolic rate going outside of your training sessions. And that's why I think it's so important and why it's also very close-sighted to just look at the calories you're burning during your exercise sessions.
So another adding to what Yuna's saying, the pathologic state is to be sedentary. Our bodies are designed to move, and to not move is to then allow for all of this completely preventable illness to come on. Like in our society, we mistake aging with immobility. And the people that keep on moving don't seem to age as much. And that's actually the way it's supposed to be. So just, you know, a little bit more, Eunice talked about going to the gym and lifting heavy weights. And, you know, by the way, posting on TikTok and other places of her doing all these magnificent things. My routine is more swimming, biking, running, and then coming home and doing a weight workout in my basement with hand weights. But in that time that I do it several times a week, I can make a demand on my body that's about 100 calories a day just to repair the work, the damage that's been done. Doesn't sound like a lot, but over the course of a month, that's about 3,000 calories, and that should be just under a pound of energy. So the pathologic state is to stay still. We need to resist that by finding stuff that we enjoy and doing it and keep on changing it. Change with the seasons and change with when you get bored, move on to something else. And it's good for your metabolism because you're going to be able to then have withstand some of the food that's being presented to you, or, you know, in the hyper palatable food that's, you know, we're trying to resist, but if it makes it past your lips, you have a second chance there. Get your muscles moving and metabolize it more quickly.
So I'll share my perspective on this. I don't think people can stay healthy without exercise. I think it is, I'll go so far as to say, impossible to stay healthy over a lifetime without exercise. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, we know that going somewhere to exercise is an invention of like the past 100 years, right? Because up until about 100 years ago, exercise was just built into your regular life. So if we look at societies that have stayed in the way that we used to live, like hunter-gatherer societies, like we quote a lot from a researcher named Herman Ponser, who studied the Hadza tribe in Tanzania, and they basically live as hunter-gatherers, still they don't have technology and all these things. They don't exercise, they don't go to the gym, they don't have a Planet Fitness, right? And they also have like no heart disease, no stroke, none of the illnesses that are basically the top causes of death in Western societies, but they're walking like 20,000 steps a day. So the human body is just not meant to be in today's world, which is why exercise is a necessity. I think if we were living 1,000 years ago, going to the gym would be worse for you because food is scarce and you're already moving all day. Why would you spend more energy at a gym? But it's like in today's world, it is something that you have to go out of your way to do just because we are not moving as much as we used to. So I think they moved more in a week than the average American moves in a day. Or sorry, they moved more in a day than the average American moves in a week, is what I'm trying to say. And I think that it was a huge insight for all of us to see that.
I have conversations I have with my patients about, you know, you have to be strong enough to do your job. So I take care of veterans, and a lot of these guys are working as firefighters and police officers. And we talk about, like, you have a huge demands on your body. You need to train up so that you don't get hurt. So we understand that. But to your point, Sharon, you even need to exercise just to be able to sit comfortably. There's an expression like called an office athlete. Like, what would it take to be able to sit for 8 hours a day and not get slumped shoulders and a bad back and pinched nerves. And here there we are as we pretty up and sit up straight. So I will refer to a Sports Illustrated article, I think it was 50 years ago, when Bobby Fischer, who was a chess master, was supposed to play in a world championship. And they wrote him up, I believe it was in Sports Illustrated. And the question first was, is chess a sport? Which we could argue about. But the article was about how he, I don't know that he necessarily wanted to exercise, but in order to sit for the 6-8 hour chess matches, he went into the gym so that he would be strong enough to sit there and not be distracted. So he would have an advantage over his opponent because he could now, he was in good enough shape to sit. How's that for an aspiration?
Just to add to that, Eddie, I know concert pianists, the best pianists I know, say the same thing, that they have to train to be able to play piano well because you're like, you're there for so long and you need to have a strong arms and a strong back and core to basically prevent injuries from playing piano, which you would never, ever, ever think.
With the time we have left, I'm going to ask you both one other kind of quick question topic, if you could share with people who are working on diet, is what should we eat? Like, this is, I mean, I know it's such a big question, but if you could maybe summarize kind of, if you cut through so much of the controversy and look at common ground and some basic fundamentals that will take people far. I feel like we argue over the 10% where there's controversy and that overshadows the simplistic perspective on maybe some of the basic things that we could all be doing that would take us really far even without getting into the weeds. So I would love to get your perspective on how people should eat when they're trying to manage their weight.
Sharon, I think that what you said about the 10% is like the most important point that nobody talks about. I came into this thinking, oh my gosh, there's so much argument. Like these people say low fat and these people say you should eat only fat and these people say you should eat all meat and these people say you should eat no meat. And like there's all this arguing. And then I realized like, no, those are just the very loud people. They're very loud and they have so many followers and like having a crazy saying eat raw liver is like much more eye-catching than saying eat a well-balanced diet. And so they say these crazy things because it gets them more followers and blah, blah, blah. So if you look at the nutrition guidelines, which have also just kind of been, we have take a hard line in the book of like, there are a lot of things that nutrition guidelines got wrong. But if you just go through them point by point, it's like, they've basically stayed the same the entire time there's been nutrition guidelines. The majority of them, there are things that have changed, but the majority of them, which is eat as much food as you need and make it primarily from whole foods, has not really changed. And I think that is basically, if you just did those two things, none of us would have a weight problem, right? It's just that those two things are really, really hard to do today. They're very complicated and they're very simple, but not very easy. And so I think eating as whole foods of a diet as possible, which means having whole grain Cheerios is not whole foods because it says whole grain, right? Like that's still a very, very processed food. So I think focusing on like fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, stuff like that, like rice, sweet potatoes, whatever, all those things, like those are whole foods because I think Michael Pollan says like if your great grandparents would recognize it as food, then it's food, right? And it's usually in the perimeters of the grocery store and it will go bad in a few days. Like that's what real food is. And so focusing on eating those things and eating them in the correct quantities, which is a lot easier when you're eating whole foods because they don't make you overeat the way hyperpalatable foods do. I think those are the most important things. And also focusing on diversity. So not eating the same two vegetables every day, right? Like there are so many vegetables and fruits to focus on that they all give you different benefits. So diversity, whole foods, and being mindful of the quantity are, I think, basically 99% of the battle.
I would add in just, you know, a little bit of mindfulness about how the food makes you feel. And I think when people recognize that eating hyperpalatable food-like substances, that they feel a little euphoric before the sugar, before the insulin rushes in and they crash, that maybe next time I'll try something a little bit different. So I think just honoring your body and understanding that your diet does not have to be perfect. And it does not have to follow the 10% like the zealots on one end or the other. You're going to find your own way. And that's okay. But be mindful that what you feed yourself should be nourishing, both culturally and a connection, as you mentioned before. Eat with people. Enjoy the food. Eat it slowly. You can savor the food. And when you have that mindset, then all of a sudden, the ultra-processed foods don't seem to fit quite as well, and you're more likely to reach for something that's a little bit more of a real food.
And also, just one more thing I wanted to mention is that sometimes I think it's okay to eat foods that aren't just for your health. Like, I think I fall into this mindset a lot of like, oh, well, this isn't good for me, so I'm not going to eat it. And, you know, that kind of thinking can get extreme very quickly. I think you kind of have to know like what kind of person are you, or the type of person that you need more structure. And so maybe you need to be more strict with yourself, or are you the type of person that's like, you can get too strict very quickly. Recognizing for me that like off this bubble tea is like really not good for me, but also I'm having so much fun making it with my sister and it tastes really good is like also okay.
Yuna and Eddie, where can people find more? Can you tell us where we can find you and where they can get the book and just more information of resources?
You can find our podcast, Food We Need to Talk, on any podcast platform. You can go to our website, foodweneedtotalk.com. That has all the links as well. And then you can find our book basically anywhere you get books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, so on. We also have an audiobook where me and Eddie are narrating. So it's basically like a 10-hour podcast episode, guys. It's insane. And that will all be available July 11th, but it's available for pre-order right now. So if you have Audible, you can add it to your credits and it will go into your feed on July 11th. If you have Amazon, you can pre-order it now. All of that is available. And then we are on social media. So the podcast is at Food We Need to Talk. I am at The Official Yuna, and Yuna is spelled with a J on Instagram. And then I'm also on TikTok and YouTube, just my full name, Yuna Jada. It's going to be hard to spell, but if you find the podcast, you'll find my name and you'll figure it out. It's a very Albanian spelled name. We're desperately fighting to get Eddie on Instagram. He won't cave, but I'm fighting for it, guys, because he's so good on Instagram.
I'll occasionally send a video to Yuna, and if you see me on Instagram, tell me about it.
Yeah, I post it on our Food We Need to Talk Instagram. There's so many awesome videos of Eddie on there because we haven't gotten him to have one yet. But basically, Eddie's Instagram is the Food We Need to Talk Instagram.
But the book, even in pre-publication, is being extremely well received with reviews in Publishers Weekly and folks on Goodreads who had a chance to take a look in advance. In the end, you know, as a clinician, as a physician, if reading the book, listening to it, makes you a little bit happier, you know, and a little bit more at peace, and you feel a little bit more in control, then I feel like I've fulfilled my role as a physician to help someone get a little bit healthier. So our wish is that for the listeners of this podcast, you know, listen to The Whole Health Cure, join us, and if it gets you a little further down the pike, then amen.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, and thank you for all the work that you do. I can only imagine how challenging it is, Eddie, with all your responsibilities to make time to write a book and do a podcast. That
you find someone like Yuna to help. That's how you do it.
And Yuna, I was going to say, in the passion, the dedication, you know, so much work goes into synthesizing information, sharing your experience, so the next person doesn't have to learn the hard way. So thank you for the work that you do and everything you've shared.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Sharon. This is so fun.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.